All right, everyone. It's another episode of Sports and Stripes with Wade and Steven. It is the week before the Super Bowl. I mean, we just had the Pro Bowl, which we can talk about. It was garbage. I mean, I didn't really watch it. I watched the highlights. But the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 52. The two teams who I predicted at the start of the... No, I didn't. New England, Philadelphia. Everyone's in Minnesota. The hype is happening. We were invited to go there. But Steven and I said, you know what? We're going to stay in London. You know, we got a lot of things going on. We don't need to be distracted by Minnesota. Let's talk about the Super Bowl. Two 15-3 teams, New England and Philadelphia. New England is 4-point favorites in this game. The line has gone from 7, 7.5, 4.5, 4 that I've got the latest one, 40-point over-under. Is this another Patriots walkthrough?
Do you know what? For the first time in a while in a Super Bowl, I've always got into the game. If the Patriots are there, the Patriots are winning this game. Mm-hmm. There is no conversation to be had about it. But I actually think for the first time in a long time, we can actually sit here and make a case that the Patriots can actually lose this Super Bowl. I mean, we've got the big thing about Gronk. I mean, it looks like he is going to play.
Apparently, he's been eating like 3 Tide Pods a day. I think he's on the mend.
Yeah, he's good to go, but it's like, how much can he really do? And if I'm the Eagles and I go into this game, if Gronk's going to be there, we know what Brady's going to do. He's going to do those little passes, you know, slants and everything
Dion
else.
Dion and White.
Yeah, that's what we're going to get. So for me, I think the Eagles have to be physical. Mm-hmm. They've got to kind of nail these guys straight away. I think the thing is, for me, from the Patriots' point of view on the offense, is that Dion Lewis must get yards on the ground.
Yeah.
He's got to get something, because I think if there is a fault in the Eagles' defense, it is against the run. Mm-hmm. They are good, don't get me wrong, but they're a lot better in the secondary.
Yeah.
So you've got to get some movement on the ground, but I think if you then rely on the fact that Brady's going to have to go to Amendola, Hogan, Cooks, that's fine, but it's going to be down to what he can do with Gronk.
Yeah.
And this is the reason why, if Gronk isn't 100%, which we know he can't be.
Yeah.
It certainly makes it a bit of a difficult game. I mean, the other side of the ball, Foles has to play like he did in the NFC Championship.
Which is hard to have, but yes.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, you've got to think he's going to be somewhere near that for them to be successful. The Patriots' defense isn't great, and you know full well the Eagles are going to stuff it down New England's throat on the ground,
mm-hmm.
and that's what they're going to have to do. And I think when I look at this, I start looking at units. So for me, the best unit, I think, on the field is probably the Eagles' offense because of the ground game.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's better than the Patriots' offense right now. But I think both offenses can get things going. I'm not surprised the line has shortened.
Mm-hmm.
It's to be expected. The over or under one, I think, is an interesting one for me because I think that's wrong. I think this is going to be over that.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the over. I mean, there's a few things that I look at. You know, obviously in this sort of New England team, one is Branch. You know, having him back in to stop the run, because he was out for the past 2 weeks, it's going to be a big thing for him because they are going to need him to stop. The one thing that Belichick always does is he takes out your number one weapon.
Yeah.
He focuses that. So to me, that's Zach Ertz. Yeah. Ertz is Gronk light, but Ertz is amazing. And I think that they're really just going to shut that down. What they do have, what the Eagles really do have, is an amazing offensive line, which I think a lot of people don't talk about, because that's how those runs get started. That's how Nick Foles can have that amount of time. Like Nick Foles, when he drilled that huge pass to Jeffrey, that was just, he had so much time there. Mm. So I think that's going to be a very big difference here. But I think Belichick is just going to really start to, you know, I think having Branch good because it'll stop the run a bit, but when you look at the way that they sort of focus on everything, you know, I think it's going to be very tight. I mean, there's just so many things that if you have a bit of a lead, as you know, any team has sort of, you let them get that marching orders, then you're in trouble. And I think that's the one thing that they have to know is that the two big things, the two big plays or the two big positions to look at here, quarterback and coach.
Yeah.
And you got Brady there, and you got Belichick there. And that, to me, is as much as I want to cheer for Philadelphia, as much as I do, anyone but the Patriots, I mean, to me, they're the worst fans anywhere. But I just can't not see this New England team coming together.
I think the Patriots will win this.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be very, very tight. I think if you compare it kind of like last season, I felt that Atlanta, for me, were a bit one-dimensional on offense.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think Philadelphia, there's a few different options that they do have.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that, you know, the New England will look at. No one studies a game better than they do.
Mm-hmm.
They just know what to do. They've been there, seen it, done it all. The Eagles are trying to win their first Super Bowl. They haven't won an NFL championship since 1960.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of their players are going to come into this, like, looking at it and go, you know, this is new ground for us.
Mm-hmm.
It is about getting off to that good start, because those nerves have got to be overcome. And the Patriots, we're not going to have those.
Yeah.
And I think the Eagles, for me, have to get ahead early, because I think as long as this game goes on, and if the Patriots will hang around, then you're always going to fancy the Patriots. I think the Patriots will win this game. I think they're going to win it by 3, and they're going to win it as a team scoring the last points. And
yeah.
I think it's going to be heartbreak for Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way you always feel against any of these times that you have New England play, that it will be a heartbreak unless you can really... I mean, even last year, I remember when they were up 28-3 and turning to my friend... You know, for a Falcons fan, and saying, "Man, you guys got this. You got this. I really believe all you have to do is hold on." He's like, "Yeah, well, holding on isn't something we're good at." And sure enough, when he left in tears, and I was laughing so hard, that does happen. I mean, I think there's just a lot of things to sort of look at in this. I think the running game is really what really can define it for Philadelphia. If they can establish that and take the pressure off of Foles, because Foles played magnificently in that game against Minnesota. I think Minnesota played very flat in that game. I don't think that they really came out of there really focused as much. I think they almost thought their defense was going to carry the day.
Yeah.
And Foles had such precision. But then when you see him when he played other games, like when he played Oakland or Dallas this season, he looked like garbage. He couldn't get a comfort zone going. And I'm sure that's what Belichick wants to focus on is making sure this kid does not get his feet established, making sure that he doesn't get any confidence. Because as soon as Foles gets that kind of confidence and that offensive line, they do have a shot. And then they do have a shot of maybe what Atlanta did last year is putting a thumping on. And that could go that way. If Belichick is able to negate and they're able to anticipate what Belichick's going to do and you have a different plan, you might be able to actually get up on these guys, which is what I'm hoping.
The thing is, with Atlanta last year is they got ahead and then went away from everything that
won them ahead. They just stopped. They're just like, okay, now we're going to play a different game. Different game.
The oldest adage in the world is do not play not to lose.
Mm-hmm.
You play to win this game. And I think the thing is with Philadelphia is that if they do get out in front, they can soak up large amounts of that clock with that running game.
Yeah.
And I think that's something they have got going for them. And then Foles can get the 5-6 yards that he might need at times to just keep the chains moving. And you know yourself, the chains keep moving, they keep getting first downs. You start losing a minute and a half and 2 minutes off of that clock.
Yeah.
Every set of four downs very, very quickly. And all of a sudden you're looking at, man, you know, this time is running out. And that's the thing, is that Philadelphia have got to get ahead and they've got to suffocate the life out of this game. If anything, they've got to turn it into a really boring game.
Yeah.
And keep that defense on the field for as long as possible, because that defense isn't great. You keep them out there, they're going to get tired, and then you can then really start moving the chains again. And I think that's what it's going to be for Philadelphia. Need to control the clock. New England need to force Philadelphia to rely on Foles more than they want to be able to.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the adage comes down to almost doing what, you know, for Philadelphia, doing what Warren Sapp would do to a prostitute. You want to hold her down, you want to beat her up, and then not pay her. And that's exactly, I think, what Philadelphia wants to do. Hold them down, beat them up, and don't give them anything at the end. Total Warren Sapp. You know, it is going to be very interesting. I think with Brady, and that's what you really have to look at, is how do you deal with Brady? And the only way to beat Brady, if you try to blitz him, he will fuck you up. He will mess you up. But if you rush four men, keep seven in the back, and just keep that constant pressure on him, that's what Philadelphia needs to do. They've got to practice all week of rattling him, of getting him down. But as far as Gronk goes, you do exactly what Jacksonville did. You take a smaller guy with a helmet, and you ram that helmet into Gronk's helmet. And then he's out.
Yeah, because, I mean, the thing is as well, if you send the four and then sit back, you've got to constantly be keyed onto Gronk. I mean, you have to think that Philadelphia have given a guy an assignment on Gronk.
Oh, yeah,
for sure. You have to think about it that way, because it's got to go.
He's the number one receiver. Of course, you're going to do something with him and trip him up.
And the thing is as well, you're not saying, you know, it's bad to sit here and say to knock a guy out of the game, but I think Philadelphia have got to be aggressive against him, be physical. Yeah. And let's see just how healthy Gronk is.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, concussions, I mean, when you look at, you know, as I told when I talked to the team or the family doctor of Brady this year, who was a pissant, by the way. But, no, he was a nice guy. But, you know, with the amount of injuries that Gronk has had, and from what, you know, this doctor said of him switching to this TB12 diet that opened him up to more injuries, you know, Gronk has got to do everything, because even if he's a bit dizzy, that is going to mess him up. That's going to mess up everything. So it is keeping Gronk off, you know, keep him frustrated, because the angrier that he gets, the more mistakes Gronk makes.
Yeah, and the thing is as well, is it's not even a case of New England can kind of try him out as and when they need him, because the minute he steps on the field, Philadelphia keyed in.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to kind of use him as well as a bit of a decoy. It's like, you're talking about Belichick here.
Yeah.
Because Belichick will be thinking about this stuff. We're yeah. saying what he's already thinking. You know, he's already thought about this, like, you know, years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're going to use Gronk also potentially as a bit of a decoy, because Philadelphia are going to be so aware of him and believe that maybe if they can stop him, that they can stop that New England offense. But the trouble is, we're sitting here talking about Brady again. I mean, Brady is, as much as it pains me to say it, as a guy who hated Montana growing up,
mm-hmm.
I always held Montana as the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Brady is now, whether he wins his Super Bowl or not, he is the greatest of mm-hmm. all time. He is the best quarterback we have ever seen. He
yeah.
has the clutch gene. He wins the big games. He dominates teams. He just does everything right. And so much more. And it pains me to say it, but all the time Brady has a breath in him, he is going to do whatever it takes to win this game. And you've got to take it out from under him. Maybe you kind of have to hit him hard. Make him see what he can do. Can he get up from a big hit?
Yeah.
You know, it's awful to talk about this, but you've got to, if you're Philadelphia,
yeah.
you've got to do whatever it takes to win this game, because you don't know when you're going to get another shot at it.
Well, especially when you've got, you know, the other man on the Patriots team, the referees. You know, you've got to make sure, because, I mean, you know, people talk about declining ratings. To me, that was also part of it. When you watch the New England game and you watch the refs, it's like, come on, I don't want to watch this anymore.
No.
So, I mean, there's got to be that element, and I think people will go nuts if we see any degree of impropriety or any sort of, you know, the referees going that way. In terms of getting to Brady, though, the whole thing is Brady, you know, everyone wants to get to him, but he's very good at that. He's yeah. very good at avoiding. And also, when I watched his little Tom on the Facebook watch thing, you know, you look at the exercise he does off season, and the way that he preps to go down for it hits, the way that he knows, you know, that's a real veteran thing, to know and anticipate the hit, where you're getting hit, the amount of pressure that's being hit with you, and how to tumble with it. You know, some other guys you watch when they go down, especially rookies, they play like in college, and they try to get out of it, or they'll put their legs in a different way, so when this bigger guy crushes you down or the pile goes on top of you, your leg snaps. Tom is very good at that, and I'm you know, I don't think he hasn't had his bell rung too many times this year. Proper hits, because he knows how to deal with it.
No, and the thing is as well, you talk about guys that go through the collegiate system, is a lot of these defenses have just like, you know, one main guy and everything else like that. You know, whereas in the NFL, you're going against multiple players. I mean, there are some players that come from college straight into the NFL, and you're like, man, that guy's a wrecking crew. I mean,
yeah.
I remember watching, you know, Jadeveon Clowney when he was playing college football. I mean, like,
oh yeah, knocking the helmet off people. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, just like, for me, it was very unfair. Just to, you know, take a side step for a second, when he played alongside JJ Watt, I was like, man, that's a great defense.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's the thing with these guys that come in, is all of a sudden they're faced with these NFL defenses, and they do think that they can play their college game in the NFL, which is the reason why a lot of, you know, when they take a look at quarterbacks and evaluating talent, they look at what systems these guys are played mm-hmm. in a lot more than just, oh, he's a Heisman Trophy winner, oh, he's done this, and this. They'll look at the tools of the quarterback and whether or not that translates to the NFL. I take a prime example. I watched a guy by the name of Damien Hagan. He was drafted by the 49ers back in, it was like 1991. He looked tremendous in college.
Yeah.
You know, part of that Colorado Buffaloes team that played incredibly great football. You know what? He didn't take a down in the NFL.
Yeah.
Because the simple reason is his game did not translate
sure.
to the NFL. And that's the thing. You know, when we look at quarterbacks, we're always kind of worried about whether or not they can translate. We've got guys coming out now from the NCAA. Can they translate to the pro mm-hmm. level? We don't know. I always think quarterback is a bit of a, you know, oh, I don't know whether or not they're going to actually be able to play at the NFL level. But, I mean, Brady's proven time and time again. And for me, I thought he was good
yeah.
in college. you didn't think he was going to be the GOAT.
No, well, you know, then it comes down to work ethic, coaching, applying yourself, you know, having that James Harrison kind of dedication, workout ethic. You know, when you look at some of the other quarterbacks that have busted, that you look at the Manziels, you look at the Cordell Stewarts, you know, Vince Young, who couldn't even make the CFL, Joni Manziel, who's barely trying to make the CFL, but maybe he'll go XFL, who knows?
No, he can't go XFL because he's actually not allowed to play in
the XFL. Oh, that's right, criminal record.
Yeah, I sent out a tweet, actually, I'm more eligible to play in the XFL than Joni Manziel is.
Yeah, good. I can't wait to see that. Steven has just been signed by Las Vegas. So, yeah, I mean, it is be interesting to see, and I'm obviously with the quarterback situation. Let's quickly do our predictions for the Super Bowl, and then we'll jump into some more NFL stuff, because we'll finish off this Super Bowl. I've got my prediction. What is your prediction? How do you see it going?
I see this game, as I just said, I think the Patriots are going to win it. They're going to be the team that scores the last points to actually win this game. And I have this down as a 24-21 victory for New England.
So you're going under then? 45 points, you're doing the points under. Okay.
Wow. Yeah, I just...
Okay, so
it's up and down.
I've got the same. My thing is, I have this as Philadelphia taking a big lead, something like 21-10 at the start, halfway, and then they lose that. New England wins it 31-28.
It's gonna. I mean, either way,
that's what I have, and then just lots of fights. I did see in Philadelphia though, one of the things that the police have they're not going to put Crisco on all the light poles. Because that's what they used to do, is put Crisco oil so no one could climb the light poles.
Yeah, they tried that, didn't they, in the championship round?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Philip, they're going to trash the city anyway. So, I mean, just have areas that you want to trash, you know?
Downtown.
Yeah, turn the downtown. I want to talk about this because obviously it's a big topical thing. Alex Smith, you know, him and Cousins, they were two guys that were going to go, you know? Everyone was wondering where they were going to go. And Alex Smith ends up taking Kurt's old job in a big deal, a lot of money deal. But you know, now we're going to wonder where Cousins is going to go. And is Alex Smith at, what is he, 32?
Yeah.
Is he a good fit for this Washington team? What kind of deal did they get? Because it was funny last night when there was like one of the other guys who was on the Kendall Fuller, who was also part of the deal. You just see, he was following on Twitter last night going, oh man, not me. I don't think it's me. And then it was just like that homer in the bushes. Oh, I've been traded.
I think what he was waiting for was when he was actually mentioned in a tweet, I think, of the trade. That's what I think he was waiting for. Because until that happens,
you're not traded. Yeah, you're not traded. It could be another guy named that. Washington has... here's the thing. Kirk Cousins has had some great seasons.
Yeah.
He's thrown the ball for, you know, multiple 4,000-yard seasons. The guy, he's got a bit of a hammer on him. You know, is this a smart deal?
I think it's an interesting way to say. I mean, Cousins is the guy that made us finally forget RG3.
Well, you like that.
poor RG3. I mean, I think it's an interesting way to say. Like, the Chiefs are moving on from Alex Smith and... Where is Cousins going to go? I think that's the interesting one. I know a lot of Dolphins fans I've been speaking to would kind of love Cousins to come over to Miami, which is, you know, it does come down to Tannehill for a start. Yeah. I mean, exactly what he can do. I mean, it'd be interesting to see, you know, is Tannehill going to be ready to go for the start of the season? I don't know. The level of damage that he took, maybe, maybe not. And I think the thing is with Tannehill is the fact he won't know until he gets out there, which is an awful dangerous situation to think about.
Mm-hmm.
So could Cousins be the answer there? I mean, I think, you know, Cousins for me is a starting quarterback in the NFL. I tell you, Jacksonville, I would love to see him there.
See, I've thought about this, and I've looked over a few different teams and the ones. The only problem with Jacksonville is they don't have any money. They don't have the room.
No.
But the one team who does have the money and the team I think he's going to go to, Jets. I think he's going to go to the Jets. The Jets have the most amount of money. They've got the room. They're in need of a good quarterback. He's got exactly that kind of East Coast mentality. You know, because you're looking, you've got Washington wanted more of a West Coast style quarterback, which you get in Smith.
Yeah.
But I think Cousins is, and he could be a good fit for the Jets, you know? And because they've got the most salary cap room, I think that they will make that money, move that money around, grab Cousins, and put them together for a good deal. Because they can use a quarterback that can sling like that.
Yeah, they could do. I mean, the thing is, as well, is, you know, that's where dreams go to die, isn't it? When you go play for the Jets. You know, many a quarterback have kind of gone there and gone, this wasn't a great idea.
Trying to fill Joe Namath's fur coat.
Related to Joe Namath, yeah. Yeah, we've all seen the various pictures and things like that, and one quarterback has gone there to die. But careers do come to an end there. If I was Cousins, I wouldn't want to go there, but it's going to come down to who has got the money, who's got the flexibility, who can restructure what they can to try and open up the room for him. I mean, you're getting yourself a very good quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, a guy that can guide you towards the playoffs if you've got the talent around him.
And that's the problem is, when you look at it, when I was going through all the different teams that he could go to, Cleveland, I don't think they're going to do that. Jacksonville, I just started looking and go, you made it to the quarterfinals with a crappy quarterback. Now, do you want to waste your money and take away from areas that you could help yourself on, you know, when you're gonna have to shift all this money around? You know, Blake Bortles isn't great, but he got you there. So
yeah, but again, it's as far as you're going to go with him. I mean, okay, you've got to look at the money. I mean, NFL contracts are a wonderful thing, the way you can restructure and God knows what else with them. If I was Jacksonville, I would sit down and see whether or not we can actually make this work. But again, it's going to come down to potentially some really tough decisions along the way, because built this all-pro defense.
And the defense, it's the most salary per money per defense in the league. So do you want to break that up? Do you actually want to start taking money from that when you go, we made it with here. Maybe what we do is shift some of our offensive money around, go for someone who can either, you know, like a Trubisky that, you know, can be a backup quarterback, because there's going to be a lot of quarterbacks going this year, a lot falling through. So you sort of go, well, we're flush with quarterbacks. Do we then wait? You put two guys on the bench, you know, almost like a Minnesota job. And that was another team I thought he could go to, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Because they got three quarterback problems. Get rid of them. Get rid of them all and just bring him in.
I mean, they've got their own decisions to make in the summer about what they're going to do going forward in terms of Bradford and Keenum, you know, and who is their number one guy going into next season.
But that almost, and Minnesota almost has the money as well. If you got, you know, you've got rid of all these guys.
Yeah.
You know, and you look at that, Thielen, you know, matching up with Cousins, you know, Diggs, with that, you know, literally two underserved wide receivers who are fast, who are big. And
I mean, Minnesota is another team that's going to take a look at it and go, you know, we almost got there. But you've got to kind of ask yourself a question when it comes back to the Jacksonville scenario is do you win in this league with offense or do you win it with defense?
Mm-hmm.
Now, for me, you win it more with offense.
Yeah.
So do you then sacrifice a little bit on defense to be able to upgrade your offense, which we know... We always say it, and everyone else says it, Jacksonville's main issue does revolve around the fact that they have one of the worst starting quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yes.
So you need to upgrade that somehow.
And trailer trash fans, but we won't get into that. But
have they become the worst, though, Jacksonville fans? Well, not the worst.
They're just
ages.
They're just Florida.
They're getting top five.
They're just Florida. I mean, it is difficult because when you talk about defenses getting here, you look at Jacksonville, Minnesota, and Philadelphia, who all had backup quarterbacks, or aside from Jacksonville, but made it on basically the strength of their defenses. And having, you know, a solid D, an okay game. But you had other teams that had great offenses, okay defenses. You know, you look at the Rams, who just fell apart. Yeah. Their defense couldn't keep up. Atlanta, their defense couldn't keep up.
No. I mean, the thing is as well, I mean, it goes, you're saying, isn't it? You know, offense wins games, defense wins championships.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Patriots are the one against that.
But Patriots have really shored up their defense. And obviously with Branch coming back this week, you know, you're going to have a bit more of a, I think, a stronger bit of a defense. But they're the weakest defense in this whole game, I think, obviously right now, in this whole quarterfinals.
Yeah, I mean, that for me, their unit, if you take a look at the four units on display on Sunday, their defense is the weakest unit out there. I mean, I think the problem is for Patriots, I sometimes wonder with this one, is that we don't very often see the very best of them until we get to the latter stages of the playoffs anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of throw out anything else you knew about them through the regular season. And that's because they play in such a weak division, they basically sleepwalk through that division anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really evaluate how good they are. I mean, okay, on paper, it says they have the 28th ranked defense.
Mm-hmm.
Do we really believe that they have the 28th ranked defense?
Yeah.
I probably don't.
No.
Even if they're middle of the pack, that is enough for them to get by.
Oh, yeah.
And they can beat most teams with that. And come Sunday, if they put up a reasonable defensive effort, we know, as we've already said, they will win this game.
Yeah.
They're just, for me, they're one of the hardest teams to evaluate.
Well, that's a thing because, you know, as you say, defenses win championships. But the defense, with a minute and a half left in the game, is not going to score for you and win it, no. You know? The defense, especially when you're playing the Patriots, and you see it in pretty much every defense, they're nervous as hell. She's just like, fuck, it's Tom. What are we going to do?
No, and this is it. Come Sunday, you, for me, I think we both believe there's going to be a scenario where the Philadelphia defense is going to be called into question, and they are going to have to stand up, yeah. And they're going to have to get that stop.
Yeah.
And we both believe they won't get that stop. No. Despite the fact we've been talking all season long,
yeah.
About that Eagles defense, you know, again, they've been a very difficult team to evaluate this year because they've had a pancake schedule.
Yeah.
You know, they've beaten who's been put in front of them, fair enough. They answered the bell against Minnesota. You have to say that.
Yeah.
But against the Patriots, that's a completely different kettle of fish. It's so different than anything else they've come across this season. So again, that Philadelphia defense has got to stand up. I know we're back on the Super Bowl again.
Yeah.
It is the main topic.
It is the main topic. It is. I mean, let's quickly talk about the new league coming in. Vince McMahon has announced 19 years on from his partnership with NBC. They'll be reviving the XFL. Some of the highlights he's made, and I'm sure you've sort of touched on it. You said in Twitter. He's going to make it quicker, simpler, and safer.
Yeah.
He's called it padded roulette. And no criminals.
Yeah, there is no
tolerance for criminals, which is, you know, sort of goes along with it because he is best friends with Donald Trump. It goes along with this, you know, you kneel, we'll shoot you in the back of the head and shoot your family.
But see, that is it, isn't it? He's come out and said every player will honor the national anthem. Yeah. That is what he's come out and said. Mm-hmm. So
it's a Patriots League football.
For me, I mean, I think they're trying to market it as, this is not like the XFL of old, mm-hmm. which was just a complete disaster.
Yeah.
And
they're still going to treat women like second-class citizens, all right? That's, woohoo, yeah, look at these cheerleaders. I mean, again, check out these girls' makeout cam.
Do you know what, though? You know, all these years on, people are still talking about the XFL cheerleaders. And I went back and looked at the photos. It's not all that.
No.
I'm sorry to say that. I know they made a lot of fuss about it at the time. You know, basically the XFL is cheerleading and stuff like that.
Yeah.
At least the one thing we're going to have this time round is that we're not going to have any link to World Wrestling Entertainment. So we're going to have none of their commentators.
Yeah.
None of their, you know, stars, whatever you want to call them, coming in and doing whatever. This is going to be, hopefully, about football. I know they talked about quickening it up. I mean, that's very, very difficult. I mean, the NFL at the moment, you're sitting at 3.5 hours long, you're saying an NFL game. They're talking about trying to get it down to people who vote about 2 hours.
Yeah, under less than 2 hours.
What is this? You know, well,
which is hard for ad revenues. Yeah. Well, I think they're talking about, you know, not having instant replay, you know, obviously, because those are the things that really take out of the game. I mean, you look at the NFL's ad revenue was down the second year in a row. So obviously they're looking at things to do. But this, I think, speaks that sort of alt-right sort of, you know, America First movement. I mean, it's going to be interesting because they don't have any, it's 2020 yet, you don't have any teams lined up. No. You don't have any cities lined up, stadium or players lined up. You know, and also what to me is going to be the big thing is what time of year is this going to be played?
Yeah, no, this is it. It's now.
Sorry, we're back. Yeah, so we're talking XFL. Yeah, what sort of, so yeah, we're talking not summer, so it would have to be springtime, I think you'd want to start in the springtime. Yeah,
I think it's going to have to be springtime, but the problem I have with that is NFL fans, once the Super Bowl is over, they're completely geared up against the NFL draft. Yeah. That's what they're looking at in the offseason.
Yeah.
Now you're going to ask them to invest in even more football. Who's going to show this game?
Well, that's it, because NBC obviously is not interested after their partnership last time soured. And I mean, the ratings were huge when the XFL first launched, and then it just
Exactly. Down. You know, the novelty scene wore off. So, again, it's going to have to be on. Is it going to be on a network, or is it going to be much like McMahon's streaming service that he does for World Wrestling Entertainment? That's the way it's going to go. I mean, I don't have a problem with that because, you know, people want to watch sport at their fingertips.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be on a major channel anymore as long as you get the revenue. But if you're going to do a streaming service, you're going to have to charge people for that service. You know, yeah. Are people really going to be willing to pay for it? It would be quite interesting, of course, if it was more reliable than Game Pass. That would be
hilarious. Oh, well, I think anything would be more reliable than Game Pass because they'll run it on their own. But I do, and I think the idea stands there as an SVOD entity on its own, that you say pay for this XFL app, you get the free app where you get all the news and information, and then you pay more for certain games or for teams.
Yeah.
So if you paid, in using a Netflix kind of thing, say you paid $1.99 and that gave you all the games, and then you paid $2.99, gives you extra stuff. But then, you know, unlike when it first launched back in 2001, there was nothing like SVOD, and it was all network television and digital cable. Even the ESPNs were starting to only then start adding other channels. So there was the proliferation of it, and you didn't have entities like Amazon, you didn't have the Netflixes, and especially when they've got the Thursday night games with the NFL, where they're trying to do a deal with Fox, no one wants to touch the Thursday games.
No.
No, the players don't want to touch it, the fans don't want to touch it. So I think it's going to be interesting, I think, that he's made this brash announcement, and it's like, I think now that he's starting to move money around, is it going to be enough money? And, you know, this sort of once bitten, twice shy, there's still enough people that are going to invest. Because you also wonder in 2020 if, you know, by that point, Trump will probably have a team by 2022.
Yeah, as you say, I mean, you've got to start looking at where the teams are going to be and who the investors are into this league anyway. I mean, you have to think, to make it successful, you've got to at least have some of the big market. I mean, you know, you've got to look at LA, New York.
Well, you got to look at those, but I mean, even LA hasn't been a big market for the NFL. I think you've got to look at the NASCAR markets. I think you've got to look at, you know, Charlotte, Carolina. I think you've got to start looking in Tennessee. You've got to start looking, you know, the sort of big outlet mall. You know, I don't think you want to try to target a big city. You want to target New York, but you'd probably want to put it in, like, you know, Scranton, New Jersey or something like that. Somewhere where it's close to the New York market, but not in New York.
I would also look at the fact that when you're first starting out with this, is get 8 teams that are quite geographically close together within reason over a few states, and try and build up rivalries as well. Because again, for me, that's the one thing that's missing in sports at times is rivalries. You've got to be able to build those rivalries. So yeah, have a couple of teams in Texas. Have a couple of teams, you know, in another state. I think you've got to keep it down there because, again, you've got to keep your costs down as much as possible and give places football that don't have pro football but have college football.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know, you know, when we had the World League of American Football, they looked at places like Orlando and Sacramento and San Antonio and
Florida and Texas are always going to be big for football, you know. Yeah. But you also have to be careful, though, too, that you don't go to a place like, you know, certain parts of Florida, you know, hurricane season, you know, you don't want to be around where your games aren't, you're going to be in August where the games are getting canceled.
Yeah. And I think this is why, if you look at Texas, if you go between February and April, you're looking at a tornado season.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other side of it.
Which is fun.
It is. I mean, I was in Dallas one year when the tornado warnings went off. It stopped me going into downtown and seeing some hockey. I thought, you know what, I actually want to live rather than watching 2.5 hours of hockey that I could probably watch.
You'd be safe in an arena. You'd be fine.
Yeah, just like everything else around it.
I've been through a few tornadoes. They're fun.
Yeah, they are fun. The only time it's ever happened to me. I mean, I think, as I said, you've got to look at different ways they're going to do this. And I think the announcement came, it was like the worst kept secret. Everyone was expecting it when he started registering trademarks and everything else. And of course, it's through Alpha Entertainment, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the company behind it, because he wants to completely take it away from anything that we knew previously.
Yeah.
We're old enough to remember what it was like previously. You should have called it something else.
Yeah, well,
call it the XFL.
I think when you got a 70-year-old man on steroids, the decision-making process ain't always good.
No, someone put like a piece of paper on his nose and he went, oh, football.
Yeah, I'll do it. I'm sure him and Trump have talked a lot about it. Let's talk about tornadoes. Let's move on to the next, hurricanes, everything. Thunder, we're talking NBA, and we're talking injuries. Oh my gosh, the injuries have just been. DeMarcus Cousins, 5 to 6, 5 to 8 weeks, they're saying, with a wrist. Is that what they're saying?
No, Cousins is a lot longer. He's done for the year.
Oh, he's done for the year.
Which means he's probably played his last game in a Pelicans uniform.
Yeah.
I mean,
which is too bad, because it's like he's finally getting the postseason. It's like, wah, 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 not this year.
I mean, they finally seem as they figured it out in New Orleans with the Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. And now, I mean, they tried to get through a deal yesterday. that ended up falling over with Nikola Mirotic coming in from Chicago, that in the end couldn't be done. So I think they're going to look at other things that they can maybe try and do, but I mean, it's really sad for Boogie, because he can leave in the summer and that's him done. But the 6 to 8 week timeline.
Okay, we're still talking here. We're talking NBA action. We're talking James Harden. Last night, 60 points. First person in their history at 60 points. Triple double, 11 assists, 10 rebounds. What the hell? This guy's playing on fire. And I think we're sort of talking that he is sort of the only great hope, I guess, to hopefully take down the Golden State Warriors.
He is the only hope, really, certainly in the West, because Houston are playing really great basketball right now. Golden State are playing within themselves, and James Harden, for anyone else that's in this game, it was a phenomenal performance. We've seen Harden at times put up this kind of game, and I always think, you know, he is that one player that you can put out there against those Warriors that make it very, very difficult for them to kind of find a way to stop him. And as I point out time and time again with people, is that when you have the Warriors, is that they put out the three of the best four players out there, four of the best six players out there. You can only argue for Cleveland having LeBron as a top player and Houston having Harden as a top player on court at any one time. The one thing you can say about Houston is that they can trot out as well the fourth best player on the court, because of CP3. You would take CP3 over Clay. No other team can do that. So for me, they are the one team that can match up against the Warriors. Whether or not they can do it over a 7-game series is very tough. I think they'll take them to 7. I think it's just a bit of a shame that we don't have them in the East, because I'd like to see a finals them two teams.
Yeah.
The NBA and the NHL have been loosely talking about getting rid of conference play when it comes to the playoffs and just have the best
teams.
Which I think is the right way to go, because that's what people want to see.
Sure, you want to see the best teams.
People want to see the best teams go at it in a 16-team tournament. And that's, I think, you know, where we're going to get to eventually. And I think that would be really great, because in the East, teams are going to get swept in the finals or maybe take one game in the finals against the Warriors. But that's what they're going to do. Uh-huh. Unless the Warriors are so beat up from trying to get past Houston.
Yeah.
And I think that's the only hope I think we can look at from an NBA Finals point of view. I don't wish injuries on people, but
I do.
There is a part of me, if the Warriors lost one of their key players, if they lost KD or Steph for the playoffs, I think this time they could potentially be in trouble. But that's the last game, going back to that, phenomenal performance from James Harden. I normally ridicule triple doubles, but that is a triple double.
Yeah.
That is a worthy
triple double. Yes, of course.
Not like, you know, these, 10 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists, 10 turnovers, whatever. But yeah, a great performance, and James Harden shows what he can do. He's an offensive juggernaut.
Let's talk quickly about the East, because obviously I'm a Raptors fan, and and you wonder what, I mean, with the Cleveland Cavaliers so depleted, and you still have LeBron one-man show, can Toronto, DeRozan and Lowry and company beat them with the way that they're playing now and take the East?
Cleveland look very beatable. Boston, I think it will come down to whether or not Hayward comes back.
Which, even if he does, is he going to come back full strength?
Yeah, I mean, from seeing some of the pictures and that gets released, I mean, he looks like he's, you know, on schedule, ahead of schedule, so they could look at it. And again, it comes down to whether or not they can get him into maybe 5 games before the playoffs, which will allow them then to kind of get him back into some kind of shape. Toronto, for me, because of the problems in Cleveland, I mean, Cleveland now have to make a move at the deadline,
mm-hmm.
With Kevin Love now being out, they have a real opportunity here. And even if it means they do get swept in the finals, you put all your eggs in one basket and you go out and try and get this.
Yeah, sure.
Now, DeRozan's added a 3-point shot to his game. He looks more of an offensive threat this year. I'm still not sold at times on Lowry. Yeah. I think Lowry is kind of overvalued around the NBA, in my opinion. So I think if I was Toronto, we know they've got a very good bench, which won't come into play in the playoffs because you shorten it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see him go and get another offensive weapon on the wing. That's what I want to see him go and get.
Who do you think for Toronto would be an ideal guy?
I would love to see them try and get like a Lou Williams.
Yeah.
An offensive juggernaut. I mean, that's what Lou Williams is. Lou Williams is an offensive juggernaut that can come in and can make his own shot and basically take over a game on the second unit. And I think that's what you kind of need. You put him out there, and you can also put him out there with DeRozan as well at times. But I would like to see him try and make a move for Lou Williams somehow and try and make that work, because the Clippers are definitely moving on, as we've seen this week, with Blake going. Lou Williams will be available. Apparently, they are listening to offers.
Yeah.
So why not? You know, get rid of a couple of players that you don't really need, because ultimately you've got to look at it. Okay. So who do I want on my roster come playoff time? Mm-hmm. That's what you're looking at.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not actually looking at who's going to get you to the playoffs now. You're looking at who you want to have on your team. You want to have a nucleus of 8-9 players that you can put out there on any given night. And I think if you go and get a guy like a Lou Williams, I would like to see him go there, and I think it really gives Toronto a real shot. I think they're going to have their hands full trying to get Ludo, because I think Cleveland are obviously going to be looking at that one. Clippers have definitely made him available. So there's going to be a lot of teams interested, because, you know, he's a high volume second unit scorer.
I guess it all depends on salary cap room and who's got the amount of room and wiggle room. You know, Cleveland is pretty stretched out with the amount of money that they're spending, so it'd be amazing to see, or if they're actually able to have some room there to be able to move it, because someone might have to take a pay cut.
Well, you know, there's nothing much you can do this season, but I mean, Cleveland have, for me, they've got to move that draft pick now. But it comes down to, if you believe that LeBron is going, which, you know, I always use the scenario of, would you marry somebody, then divorce them, then go and date somebody else, maybe like their sister, and then go back to your ex and marry them again? Would you then divorce them a second time?
It sounds like my small town where I grew up. But yes, it does. It does.
But see, that's what we're looking at, isn't it? Like, LeBron is potentially going to do that again.
Yeah.
I know he made a comment on Twitter quoted as saying that if teams do it and they move these players, it's regarded as a move forward for the franchise.
Yeah, sure.
Whereas if players do it, then it's regarded as being selfish.
And a dick move or something. Yeah,
exactly. So it's a completely different scenario. I mean, he was using that in the context of Blake Griffin. I mean, I think, you know, the franchise have made a dickish move with him
because
of what they put to him in the summer. I feel really bad. I mean, Blake has been, you know, very, very kind, as expected, about the whole scenario, but I'm sure behind closed doors, I'm sure he's broken a glass or two, because I know I would have done.
Oh my gosh, I would have punched Bruce Jenner right in the dick. I don't know if that's possible. Let's move on quickly then. NHL, before we wrap this up. Las Vegas tied their expansion record, 33 wins, tying Florida and Anaheim, but they've already done it in January. They're playing really good hockey. Las Vegas is happy, which isn't really hard, because you just have to be fat. And it's buffets there. And then the big thing we were talking about earlier also, Jaromir Jagr, you know, retiring.
Yeah, I mean, Vegas continued to defy logic and God knows what else by winning game after game. And even when they get into like a little mini slump, and these are like mini slumps, it's like a couple of games, and you think, oh, okay, this is it. The wheels have fallen off now. Teams have finally figured out how to play these guys. Then they then just like go back on another winning streak again. I mean, they, you know, it's very difficult to beat this team consistently, as we found. Tampa lost a couple of games to them. Nashville split a couple of games with them. They're built the right way. I mean, and Gallant is just a phenomenal coach that Florida decided really shouldn't be their coach, which is ridiculous. He's one of the top five coaches in the NHL.
Probably power structure, power struggles as well. They always have.
Yeah, and Florida are dysfunctional at best. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, and so they are the best team in the NHL really right now, but I'm still going with Tampa against Nashville. I won't talk about my preseason pick because that's just not worth discussing at this point. talking about one of the teams I picked to be in the finals this year.
Montreal?
No, I wasn't that drunk. Pittsburgh and Edmonton.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I kind of thought it was like a passing the torch moment of Pittsburgh kind of handing over to Edmonton, Connor McDavid and all that. I thought that would be an interesting story, and it's just turned into a nightmare. Jágr, of course, a former Penguin, now going back to the Czech Republic.
But play for his team that he owns.
And
pay himself.
I think, again, you know, a lot of people are going to go and see him play because of who he is. I must be, maybe tempted to go on.
Yeah, well, let's quickly, I just want to end before, because we're just hitting the end of time here. I just want to touch on, the NHL has announced their international games. Probably some preseason games going to be in China. But we've got Edmonton versus New Jersey going to be in Sweden at the start of the year. And Winnipeg versus Florida in Finland.
Yeah, I mean, so it looks like, I mean, going back to Stockholm again, that's definitely been announced. Obviously, the dates to be scheduled in, and then they've got the November games, much like they had in Stockholm last year, which I went to, but they're going to be in Helsinki, at the Hartwall Arena, which is a wonderful arena. And then obviously on the back end of that as well, there's going to be a game in games in Germany and Switzerland in pre-season.
Okay.
Haven't been announced yet. So I'm probably going to pencil in. I'm definitely going to go to Finland. I'm definitely going to go to Sweden. And I may go to Germany, and I can't afford to take out another mortgage to go to Switzerland. But I think it's, again, you know, the NHL is investing in this international games. We obviously, China again is another one that they will continue to look at. I think it's great news. I heard a lot of British fans kind of go, "Oh, why not London?" Or, you know, newsflash, folks, you know, like Stockholm and Helsinki aren't that far away.
Not that far. And people actually love hockey there.
Yeah,
whereas here, it's more like, oh, we have another, let's bring out all the premier football stars so they can go watch a game they don't like.
Yeah, exactly. And what's kind of annoyed me is the fact that, you know, people complain how expensive Stockholm is. Well, I don't want newsflash, folks. Stockholm's not that more, it's not as expensive as London.
It's not.
It's not. I don't care what people say. It's not as expensive as London.
And the women are way hotter, and they're just harder to hit on. Look, we're going to wrap this up. Steve is coming to join me at the Hippodrome to watch the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 52 this year. We will be doing some live broadcasts on Facebook Live and across Twitter, everything like that. So if you have tickets, congratulations. If you don't have tickets, oopsie, because we're sold out. But the bar, mezzanine, Lola's, and the steakhouse, first come, first serve. We can fit another 500 people in. Thanks again for another episode of Sports and Stripes, and we will see you next week.